ब्रह्मणो हि प्रतिष्ठाहम् अमृतस्य अव्ययस्य च शाश्वतस्य च धर्मस्य सुखस्य ऐकान्तिकस्य च
Blessed by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhakti Vedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. And I am the basis of the impersonal Brahman, which is the constitutional position of ultimate happiness and which is immortal, imperishable and eternal. We are continuing with our discussion on the impersonal aspect of the Lord. Just to summarize once again, for the last 2 months or so, we have been discussing various ways of worshipping the Lord. How many ways of worshipping the Lord are there? How many different types of worshippers are there as given in the Bhagavad Gita? Five different kinds of worshippers are mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita. The first is the Mahatma, who is a pure devotee of the Lord, who is 100% engaged in the devotional service of Lord Krishna. So he is called Mahatma, the great soul, who is always under the shelter of the divine energy. The second category of worshippers, yes, Sukritinas. The four categories of pious people are Sukritinas. We discussed that also. What are those four categories? No. Artho, Artharthi, Jigyasu and Jnani. So the four kinds of people who are the pious people who come to Krishna. How are they different from the Mahatmas? They are also coming to Krishna directly, the person Krishna. But how are they different? They come with some material motivation. But if they stay on long enough and continue to worship the Lord, then eventually they will also be promoted to the status of Mahatma. So that is the second category of worshippers of the Supreme Lord. The third category of worshippers of the Supreme Lord is demigods or demigod worshippers? Demigod worshippers. Those who worship the demigods. How do we say that the worshippers of the demigods are also worshippers of the Lord? Because they are indirectly worshipping Krishna. How so? Because they are part and parcel of Krishna. So, they are definitely part of Krishna. But Krishna is not just a demigod. So when we worship the demigods, we are only indirectly worshipping Krishna, not directly. Just as, what is the famous example that is often repeated? The tree, when you water the branches of a tree, you are also watering the tree, but that is not the proper way to water the tree. If you want to water the tree, you have to water the root of the tree, so that water will be spread all over the tree. So that is the third category of worshippers of the Supreme Lord. What is the fourth category? Impersonalists. Who are the impersonalists? Those who think that the Lord is impersonal, that God is only impersonal. He has no personal form. And last time we saw this, the time before last, that they think avyaktam vyaktim apannam manyante mam abuddhayaha. So they think that my form is coming from the impersonal. Avyaktam vyaktim. So that my personality is actually not my original personality, but that it is coming from my original impersonal form. So impersonal to personal, that is the transformation that takes place according to the impersonalist. Therefore, what does Krishna say? Manyante mam abuddhayaha. Such people are abuddhayaha or not intelligent. Because they do not understand. Param bhavam ajananto avyam anuttamam. They do not know my transcendental nature. They do not know my imperishable nature. They don't know really who I am. So therefore they think like this. That originally I am impersonal, and when I come to this earth to perform leelas or when I take an avatar, then I manifest some personality for some time. But actually Krishna says these people do not know that originally I am a person, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. So actually Lord Krishna has a form. Now there are people who say that the Lord is formless. What kind of logic do they put forward? We have seen some of these points two Wednesdays ago. What is the logic for these people to say that the Lord is formless? Does anyone remember what we have discussed? Yes? Can you say again? He will be limited in the form. And why do they think he will be limited in that form? One step further. Because they think he has. No, yes, why? Why do they think like that? Material form, that's the point. You see, because the impersonalist, or all of us for that matter, we have no everyday conception or experience of any form that is not material. Because everything we see around us is material. You have a form, your body has a form, my body has a form, this microphone has a form, and all the forms that we are seeing around us are all material forms. We are not seeing anything that is not material with our own eyes. And we also know from our experience that all these forms are limited, they are temporary, they are perishable, they have defects, correct? So therefore they say that form, if at all anything has a form, it must be material. And all material forms are perishable. So they argue that if you say God has a form, then obviously He has a material form. And like all material forms, His form must also be perishable. His form must also be destructible. Therefore, He must also be limited. Because after all material forms are limited. We are all, say, 5 feet something or 6 feet something. So we are all limited. Therefore, if God has a form, it must be material. And if it is material, it must be limited. And God is limited by this logic. But by definition, God is unlimited. So we are contradicting ourselves. Therefore, God cannot have any form. That is their logic. Clear step-by-step logic. Can someone repeat that logic once again? It's very important, because why are we going into all these arguments? So that our faith should be strengthened. It is not that we want to become logicians and debaters. But if you want to understand Krishna properly, then we must be convinced from the philosophy. Chanting the holy name is the essence. But we do not have that complete faith in the holy name. And we cannot chant the holy name 24 hours a day. So we need to convince ourselves philosophically that what we are doing is correct. We need this to protect our faith, so that our faith can grow. And as you progress in your Krishna consciousness, it is not that you will be isolated from the rest of the world. You will definitely be meeting people who are going to try to dissuade you from this path and try to discourage you. And they will say, oh, this is all nonsense, or this is all sentimentalism, or actually God is formless, but you're going to temple, it's all a waste of time. So if you're not in a position to protect yourself, or if you don't know the answers yourself, sometimes your faith may get shaken. Especially if the person across the table is very forceful and he appears to be very learned, then we may get a little shaken in our faith and we may think, oh, actually what he's saying, maybe it's right. Or maybe what I've heard all along. And you begin to get, maybe it's all wrong. So we begin to get some doubts. Therefore, it is very important to protect our faith, the tender devotional creeper that is growing in our hearts, by the regular chanting of the holy name and by the regular association of devotees. This should be protected. And a firm understanding of the very fundamentals of bhakti should be very clear. If you are not very clear in the conception that Krishna is a person, that Krishna has a form, He is an unlimited, eternal, blissful person, then where is the question of doing bhakti? Bhakti is the essence of life. If Krishna is not a person, then where is the question of doing bhakti to some formless, impersonal being? Bhakti comes into question only when there is a person-to-person relationship. Person means form. So therefore, unless we have our foundation very strong, we will not have strong faith in bhakti. We will never become good bhaktas or devotees. So let us try to repeat this logic. Why do the impersonalists say that Krishna cannot have form? Somebody like to trace out? I've just given that logic again. Yes, someone would like to try? Don't feel afraid if you make a mistake. Doesn't matter. Anyone? First point is, everything we see around us, all the forms we see, they are all material. They are all material forms, number one. What is the characteristic of material forms? Number two, they are all perishable and limited. They are all perishable and limited. Number two. Number three, if God has a form, therefore, it must be material, because all forms are material according to them. So if God's form is material, then God must also be perishable and limited. Therefore, what kind of God is He? Because God by definition is unlimited. Therefore, God cannot have form. That is their logic. Now, how would you counter this argument? We have also seen some of these points two Wednesdays back. What is the first thing you would say? Very good. You can, when he says that if God is unlimited, what kind of God is he? You counter back and say, if God cannot have something that you and I have, who are ordinary puny mortal beings, then what kind of God is he? In other words, God has everything that you and I have, and he has much more. You and I, our bodies, they have form. This microphone also has form. Ants have form. A crocodile has forms. Therefore, why should Krishna not have form? This earth has a form. This universe has a form. If everything here we see has a form, at least so many things have form, and all these things are coming from the Lord, they are within the Lord, then how is it that the Lord cannot have something that his emanations have, or that his parts and parcels have? So they may say, next step, but there is formlessness also in this creation. So we say, yeah, surely. So God is also formless. Then they say, there is nothingness in this world. Yes, God also says, I am also non-being. I am being and also non-being. I am existence and also non-existence. So God is everything. God is everything that we can think of, and is everything that is beyond our thinking power. So just as we are seeing things which have form, we are also seeing things which don't have form. For example, the air. It is formless. It is coming from Krishna. It is within Krishna. Therefore, Krishna must also be formless. Correct? Therefore, we can understand that Krishna has a form and he is also formless. Both these things go together. Yes, somebody would like to repeat that again? What is this argument? The first argument we will counter, put forward. Anyone? Yes. How is it possible God cannot have form? Yes. Therefore, he is also formless. Now, we are not saying that the impersonalists are completely wrong. But the Vaishnava's understanding is that impersonalists are incomplete in their understanding. When they say that God is formless, we agree, God is formless. But we add one point. We say, God is not only formless. God has a personality too. In fact, he is primarily a person. The personality is more important than the impersonal aspect. Why? Yes? Why? Both are eternal. Krishna's impersonal aspect, Brahman, is also eternal. Why is the personal aspect superior to the impersonal aspect? Yes, that is a more advanced argument, but a simple argument. Because the source, because the personal aspect is the source of the impersonal aspect. Brahmano hi pratishthaham. The Brahman is coming from me, Lord Krishna says. Brahman means his impersonal aspect. Because the personal aspect is the source of the impersonal aspect, therefore, Krishna the person is considered superior to the impersonal aspect. Just like I've given this example many times, the sun and the sunshine. The sun is the origin. Sunshine is coming from the sun. Sunshine is impersonal. It is everywhere. It doesn't have any shape or size. But the sun has a distinct shape. It is a globe. You can identify it. So which is superior? Both are existing simultaneously. Although the sun has no meaning without the sunshine, what kind of sun will it be if there is no sunshine? But nevertheless, of the two, which is more relatively important? The sun. Why? because it is the source of the sunshine. Although both are important, both exist together simultaneously. Similarly, Krishna and Brahman. Brahman is Krishna's impersonal effulgence, his radiance. Just like the sunshine is spreading out from all over the sun globe, just like the light is spreading all over from this bulb, similarly, the Brahma Jyoti, or the Brahman, or the impersonal aspect of God, is radiating from the personal body of Krishna. So therefore, Krishna is the source of the Brahman. This is the main point. Therefore, Krishna says, Brahmanohi pratishthaham. So that was the second point, that the person is superior to the impersonal aspect. Now, one of the other definitions of God is that God must be the supreme controller. Correct? Mayadhyakshena prakriti hi suyate sap characharam. Hetu nanena kaunteya jagat viparivartate. So God is controlling everything. Now, do you know of anything in your experience which is being controlled by something which is formless, which doesn't have any personality? For example, this country is running somehow. Although how it is running, it is difficult to imagine, but it is running. Now it is running, you may not be able to see how it is running. Somewhere the taxes are being paid, the street lights are being lit, the public parks are being maintained, and the trains are running. You cannot see directly how it is being run. It appears impersonal. Things are just happening. Correct? But still, do you think that there is nobody in control? Is there somebody in control? You will say government is in control. But government is an impersonal aspect. Government means who? What is the government? After all, government consists of some people who are elected by you and me, and they go to parliament, and finally they form a government, and they are the one who are deciding what is to be done in what way. So ultimately, behind the government, the impersonal appearance of the government, there are persons. There are ministers. And behind the minister, there is a prime minister. In other words, ultimately everything is controlled by a person. Correct? Just another example. A powerhouse. We are getting current here. For us, we just switch on the switch and current comes. But if you go a little beyond, where is it coming from? From the electric substation. Where is that coming from? You trace it back from the powerhouse. So much power is coming, but ultimately it's all being controlled by the engineer, the person. So the point is, we understand God is the supreme controller. And controller must mean eventually he is a person. And do you know of any person who is formless? Anyone you know, you name? Anyone's name you know who is formless? Who doesn't have a form? Except the invisible man of H.G. Wells. Actually, even he has a form, but you can't see that form. So, if he's a controller, he's a person. If he's a person, he has to have a form. Therefore, Krishna has a form. Simple arguments. It's not very complicated. Correct? And what is more, this is all regarding material forms. But the impersonalists, they cannot understand that actually Krishna's form is spiritual. Because the impersonalists have no conception of spiritual form, so they say all form must necessarily be material. But they are wrong in their very fundamental premise. Krishna is Satchidananda Vigraha. Lord Brahma declares, Ishvara Paramaha Krishna Satchidananda Vigraha Anadi Radir Govinda Sarva Karana Karanam. You have heard this shloka many times. It's a very important shloka. Of all the controllers, Krishna is the supreme controller, and he is Sat Chit Ananda Vigraha. He has a form, but what is his form made of? His form is not made up of Kapha Pitta Vayu. His form is made up of Sat Chit Ananda. Sat means eternity. Chit means full of knowledge. Ananda means full of bliss. So his form is spiritual. It is eternal. It is blissful. And it is complete and perfect. What is the meaning of Krishna's spiritual form? It means that it is unlimited. Last time we quoted one shloka. Om Purnamadaha Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnam Eva Avashishyate. What was the argument we gave to explain how Krishna has a form, but that form is not limited? By this shloka, yes? Can you explain a little more? Krishna is the whole, W-H-O-L-E, not H-O-L-E. Actually, he is also the whole, H-O-L-E also. Because whole is included in W-H-O-L-E also. So Krishna is nothing, nothingness and also everything. Non-being and being both exist in Krishna. Yes? Is also whole in the sense, Krishna says he is perfect and complete. Om Purnam Adha Purnam Idam. He is complete and perfect, and whatever comes from him is also complete and perfect. It is a complete whole in itself. And even after so many unlimited complete wholes and complete perfect emanations come from him, what does he remain? The complete whole. There is no diminishing in his powers, in his form. He doesn't feel weak. Oh, so many jivatmas have come from me, or so many material universes have come from me. He is exactly as he is. What was the example given last time about infinity? Infinity minus 5 is infinity. Infinity minus 100 is infinity. Infinity minus infinity is infinity. Infinity minus 1 means jivatma. No difference. Infinity minus infinity means all the other avatars. All the avatars of Krishna, Narsingadev, Vamanadev, Lord Ramachandra, they are also infinitely powerful. But they are also expansions of Krishna. They are coming from Krishna. But even though Krishna is producing unlimitedly powerful expansions, he doesn't become zero. He remains infinite. So therefore Krishna's form is unlimited because he is producing unlimited other forms who are also unlimitedly powerful. So because the impersonalists have no conception of the power of Krishna or the abilities of Krishna, so in their ignorance they simply make a sweeping statement that God must be formless. So Krishna remains playing on the flute, Shyam Sundar Krishna, as he is in the spiritual world. And without any loss, without any diminution in his abilities or powers or his beauty or his form, he remains exactly as he is. We saw one story last time of Brahma Vimohan Leela, how Brahma was bewildered when he saw he stole the calves of Krishna. Correct? There's one more story to illustrate this point. One time, the great sage Narad, he was visiting Dwarka. This was about 5,000 years ago when Lord Krishna was present on this planet. And he wanted to offer his respects to Krishna. So he went into one of the palaces of Krishna to meet him. And he saw Krishna was there with his chief queen, Rukmini Devi. And he offered his obeisances and worship. He offered wonderful prayers to Krishna. Krishna at that time was engaged in eating some prasad. He and Rukmini were eating. So he offered his obeisances. And then he said, let me visit the other queens also and I will offer my respects and go away. So when he went to the second palace, Krishna was there with his second queen, Satyabhama. And he was engaged in performing some sacrifice, yajna. So he was surprised that just now I have seen Krishna there eating and now he is here with Satyabhama performing sacrifice. So anyway, he offered obeisances. He went on to the next. And there Krishna was with his third queen, Jambavati. And he was giving in charity to the brahmanas. He was giving cows and other gifts to the brahmanas who were there in charity. So Narada was even more astonished. And this way Narada went to each and every palace where there was one queen. How many queens did Krishna have in Dwarka? Yes? 16,108. And therefore Krishna gave one palace to each of his queens. Correct? In this day it's difficult to get even one flat. 700 square feet, if you get one flat, you're very lucky. So Krishna had many palaces for each of his queens. So Narad Muni went to each of these palaces, 16,108 palaces, and in each palace he found the very same Krishna doing something with each queen. It's not that he is doing the same thing in all the palaces. In each palace with different queens, he was doing different activities. And Narad Muni, when he was seeing this, he was getting increasingly bewildered and increasingly astonished. And by the time he was through with 16,108, he had truly become thoroughly astonished. Then he understood how great is Krishna. So we can see Krishna in Dwarka had expanded himself into 16,108 forms effortlessly. And each of his forms were doing separate activities differently. Then there is another example of how Krishna has expanded himself unlimitedly in the material world. The form of the Paramatma. Paramatma is Krishna's expansion, plenary portion of his expansion. And the Paramatma form is there in everyone's heart. Ishvara Sarva Bhutanam Riddeshi Arjuna Tishtati. Not only is he there in everyone's heart, he is also there in every atom. Self-same Krishna, he is also spiritual. He is there in every atom, unlimitedly. How many human or how many living entities are there in this creation? Can you count? No, that's the number of species, 84 lakh species. But how many different bodies? They are different species, unlimited bodies. Can you count the number of bacteria, number of cockroaches, number of rats? Very relevant today. Number of human beings? Difficult to count. What to speak of number of atoms? Because Krishna is there in each atom also as the Paramatma. So therefore Krishna has expanded himself unlimitedly, but still he remains in his abode as he is. So therefore the impersonalists, because they do not have complete understanding of Krishna's spiritual form and what it means to have a spiritual form, therefore they simply decry the Supreme Lord as being impersonal. So Krishna is personal, he has form, but he has spiritual form, and this spiritual form is unlimitedly powerful and it can produce unlimited powers. So therefore now we are all convinced that Krishna has a form, and at the same time Krishna is formless. So in the ultimate analysis there is no conflict between these two, the personalist and the impersonalist approach. Why? Because one who truly knows God, he knows that God has both the personal aspect and the impersonal aspect. We discussed one very important shloka from Srimad Bhagavatam. Vadanti tat tattva vidas tattvam yajnanam advayam brahmeti paramatmeti bhagavan iti shabdyate. What does this shloka say? Does anyone remember? Very important shloka. What does it say? Atma paramatma in bhagavan or Brahman paramatma in bhagavan? Brahman. This shloka says that the absolute truth, the Supreme Lord, is to be understood at three levels. Brahman, Paramatma and Bhagavan. What is Brahman? Brahman is his impersonal effulgence, his impersonal bodily radiation. Paramatma is a localized aspect. And Bhagavan is Shri Krishna, the person, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the origin of both the Paramatma and the Brahman. Now in the last 8 months or so, that we have been having these Wednesday classes, we have discussed the personality of Sri Krishna in great detail, particularly in the beginning. And about 2 or 3 months back, in great detail, we have discussed the Paramatma aspect. So what remains to be discussed in detail now, since we have discussed last time and also today and perhaps next 1 or 2 more classes, is the Brahman aspect. So we have already seen that the Brahman or the Brahma Jyoti is the bodily effulgence of Krishna. Now to understand this better, let us see one nice picture which explains what is the position of the material world, what is the spiritual world, and what are the spiritual planets, and what is the Brahma Jyoti. So we will get a better understanding of what is this Brahma Jyoti. So first, just imagine, there is only Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna. There is nothing else apart from Krishna. Just try to imagine this for a moment. Of course, that is never true, because Krishna's energies are also eternal. So all this is going on and existing eternally. But nevertheless, just for simplicity, assume that Krishna is alone standing. And from him is coming the Brahma Jyoti, just like the sun and sunshine. All the rays are emanating from him. And Krishna has also expanded himself to form spiritual planets, the whole spiritual world. And in this spiritual world, in one small corner, there is the material world. What we know of is only the material world. When you look out into the night sky, you see all the stars and planets. This is only part of this one material universe. And this one tiny material universe, which is so large, but still it's tiny. This is just one among unlimited number of universes. And all these unlimited material universes together comprise the material creation. And all this material creation is simply one fraction of the entire spiritual creation, the spiritual world. So just see what is the enormity or the scale of things. So let us see here. This is the material world, the small corner here that you see. Can everyone see this? This small black circle here indicates the material world. means all the material universes, unlimited material universes, are all accommodated within this one little black circle here. Don't worry about what is presently inside. That we will discuss at some other time. But this is the material world. The material world, inside that, innumerable universes. Each universe inside, the small orange dots that you see inside is black. Each is one universe. Universe is called Brahmanda in Sanskrit. Anda. Anda means egg. An egg has a covering that is hard. Similarly, each universe is hard and dark inside. Inside there is no light. It's all darkness. That's why when you look up into the night, it's all dark. Unless there is a sun or unless there is tube light, you can't see anything. That is the nature of each material universe. That inside it is all dark because it is covered over, and inside is hollow. And inside is hollow are all the different planets and so on. So there is one universe which is dark inside. And all these universes together form the material world that is inside here. And that is only one small part of the whole spiritual creation. All these other things that you see, the red circles that you see here, they are all the different spiritual planets. This material world is made up of matter. But the spiritual world is made up of spiritual substance. Satchidananda Vigraha. Just as Krishna is Satchidananda, the Atma is Satchidananda, the spiritual planets are also Satchidananda. They are all made up of spiritual substance. Innumerable planets. You can't count how many planets there are. So vast. And the chief of all those spiritual planets is the chief planet of Krishna, which is called Krishna Loka or Goloka Vrindavan. And in this Krishna Loka planet resides Krishna. Krishna personally resides here. You can see him here playing on his flute. And from Krishna residing here in Goloka Vrindavan, the Brahman is emanating. And all the different spiritual planets are coming. All the avatars are coming. The material world has come. Everything has come. And also you can see all these lines here, yellow lines. The radiation that represents the Brahma Jyoti. Just like imagine the sun and the sunshine. All the planets in the solar system are floating in the sunshine, which is bright. Similarly, all the spiritual planets are floating in the Brahma Jyoti. And even the whole material creation is also floating in the Brahma Jyoti. So Brahma Jyoti or the Brahman is nothing but this impersonal aspect of the Lord. It is a radiation coming from the body of Shri Krishna, who is located in Goloka Vrindavan, which is also an expansion of his own body. So ultimately everything is an expansion of Krishna. Krishna's spiritual body. Is it getting too difficult? Or everyone is able to follow? Please raise your hand if it is getting too difficult. But these are very fundamental things. If you understand this very nicely, then in future there will be no problem. Because very often we'll be talking about merging into the Brahman, and we'll be using so many terms. So one has to be very clear about what each of these things mean. So this is the Brahman, the Brahma Jyoti. Now this Brahma Jyoti is the goal of those who are impersonalists. They want to enter into the Brahma Jyoti. Their ultimate goal is to reach the Brahma Jyoti somehow or the other. Just imagine, for example, if somebody on this planet wants to simply go and float in the sunshine in outer space in the solar system. He just wants to be there. Not a very pleasant prospect. But if somebody is like that in the spiritual platform, then he will be like an impersonalist who wants to simply go into the Brahma Jyoti and just be a small spark there and just be there. Nothing, doing nothing, thinking nothing, just existing. Sat, just existing eternally. So this Brahma Jyoti is the destination of those who are the impersonalists. Now impersonalists are of two categories. Those are directly following the Brahman and those are also following Paramatma. So there is Brahmavadi, Paramatmavadi and Bhakta. The Brahman is sought for by the Jnanis. And then they can attain this Brahma Jyoti. Those who are following the path of Ashtanga Yoga, the yogis, they also aspire to reach the impersonal Brahma Jyoti. They also want to be there. It is said that actually the Paramatma Vadi or the yogis, if their practice of yoga matures into bhakti, then eventually they will reach the spiritual planets like the bhaktas do. But if they're incomplete in their sadhana, and they desire somehow, instead of becoming devotees, if they want to become impersonal, if they want to negate their existence, then they will also reach the Brahma Jyoti. So both the Brahmavadis and the Paramatmavadis both reach the impersonal effulgence of Krishna. And only the Bhakta, the devotee of the Lord, he occupies one of the spiritual planets. He goes on to the planets, and having gone to the planets, he associates with Krishna or Krishna's different expansions. So different destinations. Do you remember now how we said that even in this world, according to your nature of worship and the nature of your spiritual practice, there are different destinations? Different destinations for different forms of worship in this world. Similarly, even for those beyond this world, different destinations for different categories of transcendentalists. So those who are following the path of Jnana Yoga, they attain the impersonal effulgence. Those who are attaining those who are following path of Ashtanga Yoga, they also attain the path of, they attain the Brahma Jyoti. And only those who are bhaktas, they attain this spiritual planet, the chief planet being Krishna Loka. And the devotees of Krishna come there. Of Lord Sankarshan, there is a planet of Lord Ramachandra. All the different avatars that you heard of, and plus of many more, they are all existing here. So devotee of Lord Ramachandra, he will go to Lord Ramachandra's planet in the spiritual world. Devotee of Krishna will go to Krishna Loka. So the devotee is assured of going to one of the planets in the spiritual world. But the Brahmavadis, the impersonalists, they will only attain the Brahma Jyoti. So actually, the Brahmavadis or the impersonalists, their goal is they want to nullify their existence. They want to lose their individuality. They want to simply merge into nothingness. Just exist in the effulgence and be as they are. This is called spiritual suicide. Just like material suicide means when somebody is really frustrated with his life, he wants to shoot himself or take poison. He wants to destroy this body. He wants to destroy his individuality and his personality. But what is spiritual suicide? Spiritual suicide means that you want to negate your spiritual individuality. The Jivatma is an individual, it's a person. So when you want to finish off your spiritual individuality, that is called spiritual suicide. So Krishna says, Ye yatha mam prapadyante tam sathaiva bhajamyaham. Whoever wants to approach me in a particular way, I fulfill that desire. So because the impersonalists want to negate their personality, they want to extinguish their individuality, they want to merge into the impersonal aspect of God, so the Lord very kindly, what does He do? He extends His arms, His impersonal arms, and He says, come, and He absorbs them into His impersonal effulgence. In the impersonal effulgence, there is only Sat existing eternally. Now what happens to these Jivatmas when they enter into the Brahma Jyoti? After that we will see next time. But anyway, the point is that they go there. That is their goal. So such spiritual suicide is obviously not recommended. In transcendentalist will not want to finish off his activities. He wants to reach the spiritual planets. Therefore, the understanding of Brahman, Brahmanohi Pratishtham, is not the complete and perfect understanding. Because there are higher understandings. Higher than Brahman is Paramatma, and higher than Paramatma is Bhagavan, Sri Krishna. So therefore, the Brahman is like a radiation. It is very glowing, it is very dazzling. Because of this dazzling light, we cannot see. You see, blindness or inability to see is caused by two things. One, when there is no light in darkness. Or second, when there is too much light. Is that correct? If everything is dark, pitch dark, there is no light, then obviously you cannot see anything. That is very easy to understand. But you also experience, if somebody suddenly shines a torch in your eyes, can you see? Or you may have the experience when you are motoring down the highway and cars are coming in the opposite direction with their headlights on. You get blinded, you can't see. You can't see where the light is coming from. So you have to stop the car and just close your eyes. So the first thing is those who are ignorant due to their atheistic nature. In this material world, inside, as I mentioned earlier, everything is dark. Because it is dark, there is ignorance. So because of this darkness of ignorance, people first of all believe there is no God. Where is God? So there is darkness completely. due to ignorance. So they have to be enlightened with the torchlight of knowledge. And secondly, the impersonalists, just like the atheists are in darkness, literally, the impersonalists also, they are in another kind of ignorance. That kind of ignorance comes because of too much light of the Brahma Jyoti. Because they go out into the Brahma Jyoti from the material world, so they are blinded by the dazzling effulgence. Too much light and they can't see. They can't see where is the light coming from. Therefore, in the Isha Upanishad, there is very important shloka, which in which a devotee is praying to the Lord that you please remove this dazzling effulgence. Hiranmayena patrena satya sapihitam mukham tatvam pushana pavarinu satya dharmaya drishtaye. He says hiranmayena patrena. He says hiranmaya patra. Hiranmaya means dazzling, just like gold, shining, glittering like gold. Patra means covering. So he said this hiranmayena patrena. This is coming. Satyasa apahita mukham. So what does the word mukham mean? Face. Does it refer to anything formless? It means mukham means face. Can any formless being have a face? Yes. When you talk of mukham or face, you refer to a person. Correct? So this devotee is praying. Hiranmayena patrena satyasa apahita mukham. It is covering your face, my Lord. This dazzling effulgence, this Hiranmaya Patra, this dazzling effulgence is covering your face, so please remove. Covering apihitam mukham. So please remove it. And reveal yourself. Apavrinu, please remove it. And satya dharmaya drishtaye, please reveal yourself to your devotee. Please exhibit yourself to me. I am your devotee, my Lord. And this dazzling Brahman, the impersonal aspect, is blinding my eyes and therefore I am unable to see you. So please remove this dazzling effulgence and let me see your personality. And in the next sloka also, he prays, the same devotee prays, Pushan ekarshe yama surya prajapatya vyuha rashmin samoh tejo yatte rupam kalyanatamam tatte pashyami yosa vasav purusha soham asmi. Vyuha rashmin samuh tejo. Teja, this effulgence that is coming, what should you do? You please remove it. You kindly withdraw. Samuha. And what should you do? I want to see your effulgent form. Kalyana tamam tatte pashyami. Please let me see your most auspicious form. Rupam. Again the word rupam. Rupam means form. Form only for a person. So very clearly in this Isha Upanishad, it is stated here that the Brahma Jyoti is subordinate to the personal form of Krishna. And it is simply a distraction from understanding Krishna's form. Similarly, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Queen Kunti prays, my Lord, you are Satchidananda Vigraha. You are full of spiritual potency. But your spiritual potency, your spiritual Satchidananda form is now being covered by your dazzling effulgence. So please remove this dazzling effulgence and let me see your form, Satchidananda Vigraha, as it is. So this is the desire of the devotee. He wants to see the personal form of Krishna. He is not so much interested in the impersonal form which is coming from Krishna. And the impersonalists therefore are always kept in ignorance because they are blinded by this dazzling effulgence of the Brahman. And therefore they have no factual information of what is beyond the light. Just like when you are on a highway, if the headlight of the car coming towards you is shining very brightly into your eyes, you cannot make out whether it is an ambassador or a truck or a lorry. You cannot see the driver's face. You cannot see how many passengers there are in the car. You can only see light. So similarly, the impersonalist, because he is dazzled by this effulgence, he cannot understand what is beyond the Brahman. He cannot understand that beyond the Brahman, there is Krishna. And there is the Lord's abode. All the spiritual planets are there. And on these different spiritual planets, Krishna's different devotees are there. And they are all engaged in different pastimes with the Lord, in personal relationship with the Lord. They all have personal contact, personal touch with the Lord. That is why they are there. And it is there that they are serving the Lord personally. So all these personal interactions of different devotees are going on in the spiritual world, in different spiritual planets. But all this information is unavailable to the impersonalist who is simply blinded by this dazzling effulgence. Once I remember when I was in Calcutta, there was one impersonalist sadhu who came to give lecture, and his talk was titled, "You are the whole, you are the whole," which is an impersonalist idea that you are God, I am God, everyone is God. So I was very much taken aback and very shocked and even aghast that he was speaking so blasphemously about the Vaishnava philosophy. I was not able to understand why Srila Prabhupada is speaking so strongly against the Mayavadis and impersonalists till I heard this gentleman. He said, the Vaishnavas, they believe there is some planet, Vaikuntha. But what is the Vaikuntha? It's all zero. There is no Vaikuntha. What do you do when you go to Vaikuntha? Do you sit and stare at the Lord's face? You will sit and stare at him, and he will sit and stare at you. After some time, you will get fed up. Because how long you will sit and stare at each other? Then you will get fed up. And then Krishna will say, get away from my sight. He was actually speaking, I'm quoting practically as far as I can remember. He was actually speaking like this in his lecture. Why? Because he was blinded by the dazzling effulgence of Brahman. He didn't understand Krishna's personality. He didn't understand what will happen, what is happening in the spiritual planets, how the different devotees are engaged in so many transcendental loving pastimes with the Lord. This conception is completely beyond him because he's ignorant due to the blindness of the Brahman. So therefore, in their ignorance, they blaspheme. So therefore, it is said, Mayavadi Bhashya Shunile Hoibe Sharbanash. Lord Chaitanya forewarned us, do not associate with such impersonalistic Mayavadi people. Because if you listen to them, then your faith will get contaminated. Your consciousness will get contaminated. And the pure Siddhanta of pure bhakti to Lord Sri Krishna will get vitiated. It will get contaminated in your heart. Therefore, we do not compromise with this Siddhanta of unalloyed devotional service to the Supreme Lord Sri Krishna. And that is the supreme goal of our life. Not that we should try to merge with the impersonal aspect. So keeping this one goal in mind, that we want to become pure, unalloyed devotees of the Lord, we should conduct our lives. And what is the principal way for doing it? To chant, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So I do realize it was a complicated subject, but this is very, very important. So please try to take this subject matter very seriously, because you will come across many people who have this kind of philosophy. And this verse was also a little complicated, but simply for the benefit of the first line, I selected this shloka today. So we will have darshan as usual now, and after darshan, we will have some question answers. Hare Krishna. Thank you.
Do Mayavadi consider themselves as the controller and the proprietor? And what?
They think that they are actually the Lord, but right now, temporarily they have forgotten. They are under some illusion for the time being. But once they come back to the platform of liberation, then they will be the Lord and controller once again. They will just merge into the impersonal Lord, and all the illusion will be gone. They don't consider themselves to be controllers in this material body, because they think this material body is Maya. Ultimately, they are all Narayan. So they worship, they greet each other as Om Namo Narayana. When the sannyasis, Mayavadi sannyasis greet each other, they greet each other as being Narayan. You are Narayan. And the other person also offers respects. Yes, you are also Narayan. So, consider themselves to be controllers in this body, but because they think that they are also the Lord, so they are offensive. It is considered to be an offensive mentality from the viewpoint of pure bhakti. Are there any other questions?
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Prabhuji, you explained that Lord Sri Ramchandra and Narasimhadev, etc., they have their own planets in the spiritual sky.
Yes.
Similarly, does Mahavishnu also have his own planet? And what about the position of the demigods? Do they also have a planet in the spiritual sky? Because many people offer worship to demigods.
Now, as we have seen in the lectures on demigods, the demigods' planets are within this material world. The demigods' planets are all here, inside, in this tiny, tiny speck. And this big figure that you see here is Mahavishnu. Mahavishnu is the junction between the spiritual world and the material world. He is lying in the spiritual world, and from the pores of his skin, the planets are emanating, the universes are coming. So Mahavishnu, he is lying in Yoga Nidra. We'll discuss all this in more detail perhaps at the appropriate time. But Mahavishnu is just lying in the causal ocean, Karana Sagar. And from him, the whole material universe is coming. So otherwise everyone has planet, their own planet. You had put up your hand, yes, Hare Krishna.
What is the Mayavadi's interpretation of the Bhagavad Gita and the scriptures? How do they view the Bhagavad Gita?
Actually, there is not even a standard version among all the Mayavadis. There are so many different brands and grades and shades of Mayavadis. They all have their own opinions. But the whole point is that they consider Krishna to be Maya. So therefore you can understand how much they will value Krishna's words. So they just take it as some important message that is there. They think the Brahman has spoken through Krishna. We will be discussing this subject because this is only the second lecture on in the impersonal aspect. We will be having at least one or two more. Just like we had four lectures covering demigods, we will have at least one or two more on the impersonal aspect in Mayavad. One particularly, especially on Mayavad. So maybe we can discuss that more at that time. Any other?
You said impersonal realization is for jnanis, I mean those who cultivate knowledge. Aren't we also cultivating knowledge? Like, what is the difference?
The difference is, what is the motivation? We are cultivating knowledge about Krishna with the aim of becoming Krishna's pure devotees. They are cultivating knowledge with the aim of becoming one with the Lord. That's the first difference. Second difference is, our method of cultivating knowledge is to simply accept in the bona fide disciplic succession, parampara, shruti, to hear submissively what is there in the shastras and understand that and apply in our life. The jnanis, they also apparently follow the shastra. Their process is of philosophical speculation. Speculate, they try to intellectually understand which is God, what is God, what is the absolute truth. Neti, 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 na iti, na iti, na iti. So they speculate, this is not God, that is not God, this is not the truth, that is not the truth. So in this way they try to understand what truth is not, but they can't understand what truth is. So they follow process of speculation. So there is difference in the process and not difference in the purpose or the motivation. Yes?
Impersonal Brahmanvadi, are only this Mayavadi only, or is Mayavadi different than this impersonal Brahmanvadi?
You can assume the impersonalists and Mayavadis to be one and the same, for all practical purposes. What exactly?
No, what is the difference if it is...
No difference. You had one question?
Our Bhakta's experiences of Prahlad and all this, he has appeared in person, how Mayavadi can explain by that Brahma Jyoti? How he comes in.
That's what we discussed last time. Avyaktam vyakti mapannam manyante mam abhubhaya.
How Mayavadi will explain?
That is what they say. That originally the Lord is impersonal. He has just taken a form. He has assumed a form. And he has come. Once he finishes his purpose, again back to formless.
But the message is received by somebody and then he has come. No. He yes? cannot come or not. Like this.
What they are saying, Brahman is full of knowledge. The Mayavadis also understand that Brahman is full of knowledge. Brahman is all intelligent. But they say that the forms of the Lord, the different avatars, when they come to the earth or to the material world, they are forms that are assumed by the impersonal. So the impersonal Brahman, he assumes a particular form for a particular purpose, finishes that purpose, and then goes back and merges back into the Brahman. That is their idea. Therefore they are called Mayavad. Maya, that means even the Lord's body is Maya according to them. That is the whole idea.
He's a controller of the universe, no?
Yes,
to protect the bhaktas.
Yes, he's a controller of the universe, but they say actually the ultimate controller behind is the impersonal. Actually, logically at every point you can defeat the impersonalist idea. And we can see that it is not a very tenable idea. But nevertheless, Krishna gives inspiration to each person from within according to his own mentality. So therefore they have developed strong faith in that conception. That faith is also given by Krishna. Correct? Yo yo yam yam tanum shraddha, shraddha yarchitum ichchati. Whatever your mentality, you get the faith accordingly. Right, last question. Somebody had a question here?
Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
What is the Vaishnava conception of the spirituality in the form? Because what they also see is like, in fact, a material form only, right? So,
no?
I mean, whatever they see in this world, they see as spiritual?
Of the world?
Yeah.
Yes, the Vaishnava understands that this creation has material form. And what we can see is only material form with our material eyes. But when you develop spiritual vision, then you can see spiritual form also. For example, right now, Krishna was present in front of us for 15 minutes. We could see him. Was that material form or was it spiritual form? What do you say? Yes?
Spiritual form.
But to me, it appeared like material form.
That's what I'm asking you, because theoretically we understand that it is okay, spiritual form.
Yes.
So we understand, but practically...
It's a question of vision. It's a question of vision.
But nobody
has... Krishna's form is actually spiritual form. Krishna has accepted the form of the deity. But to us, because we don't have that vision, we think it is material form. As far as all the other forms are concerned, this fan, this tube light, this body, this is material form. It's temporary. So the Vaishnava has both understandings. He understands this material form and he also understands that there is spiritual form. And he understands that matter has form only because of spirit. Matter does not have form on its own. Matter is imparted form by spirit. Then only can it have form.
As you said that, you see that there is no ultimate happiness in the Brahma Jyoti. There is no enjoyment,
yes.
There is no ananda.
Yes.
Right? But this verse says that the constitutional position is Brahma Jyoti, which is full of ultimate happiness, eternity and everlasting. So
yes.
It's again...
Very good question. This is an important question which I did not get time to discuss because we would have gone on for another 20 minutes. So only the first line took us a long time. Actually, when he talks about ultimate happiness, there are grades of ultimate happiness. You see, when you reach the Brahma Jyoti platform, you have reached a platform of negation of all material distress. There is no more material misery. No birth, no death, no old age, no disease. Because you don't have this material body anymore, which is a source of your misery and a source of your suffering. So because you have regained your original spiritual status without the material identification, therefore you have a sense of peace. A sense of peace which is called Brahmananda. Now this Brahmananda is happiness, but it is insignificant compared to the happiness of bhakti. That also in more detail we will discuss at the appropriate time, perhaps two lectures from now. So when he talks about ultimate happiness, what he's talking about is the negation of all material distress. That is the beginning of real ultimate happiness. It is not the ultimate in happiness. The ultimate in happiness is of pure devotional service, bhakti. Last question, positively.
Now suppose if I were to encounter an impersonalist.
Yes.
And we both were to debate whether I would be debating that God has a form and he would be debating that God doesn't have a form. So there he would emphasize that to assert his view about formlessness, he would emphasize that the material observation that any form in this material nature is finite.
Yes.
So God cannot be cannot have form. So this I will negate, that this is just a material observation, but in spiritual this God is not finite, even though he has a form. But if I were to assert my point that, suppose the point is that God is the supreme controller, if you were to debate on that. So here I am citing the material observation that,
I got your point. What you're trying to say, in one case, we are given an example of our experience, what is within our experience. And in another case, we're citing an example of something that is beyond your experience. Correct? Is that your argument?
Yeah.
Well, yes. You see, as far as the controller is concerned, it is a fact. We are going by the process of reasoning. They should also try to illustrate from everyday examples of how it is possible for a controller to be impersonal. It is not a logical thing. When we talk of spiritual form, we are also talking of something that's logical, because they are going to be talking from the logical platform. So we are logically showing how Krishna's spiritual form is unlimited. because there is Sachidananda Vigraha. We are describing the qualities of spirit and the nature of spiritual form. Therefore, we are able to take advantage of both sides of the argument. Maybe more on this subject we can discuss a little after the class, before I put off everybody to sleep even more.